we've been having all kinds of conversations about future-proofing, about responsible growth, about how we take this industry forward. Are we doing the right things? Is there more we should be doing? Is there more we could be doing? And the idea of account-based play, ID-based play, continues to be talked about. And if you were in the session yesterday with Parr on his overview of Norse tipping, you really do see that that is an option that could really reduce some of the issues that we have. It's one of those opportunities that probably deserves more look. And today, in North America in particular, really the most account-based play we have is our online portal and the work that we have to do there. Or if you're in a some sort of VIP or players club at casinos. So why hasn't it become more widespread? Why haven't we as an industry looked at account-based play as one of those real true options towards responsible growth? So it's my real pleasure to call up to the stage Kevin Gass, Vice President of Lottery Gaming at BCLC. Kevin's responsible for the strategic development of the lottery business unit, providing leadership and strategic direction in support of marketing, sales, distribution of lottery brands. He has operational responsibility for staff who provide products, services, and support to the organization, the customers, and the business partners. And he's also leading a new vision and a transformation, really, of BCLC called P360 that we'll get into and talk. So please give a warm welcome to Kevin Gass.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
I say when we go from two panelists to one, the pressure increases more than 50%.
Thank you for that. Yes.
But, you know, we're here to talk about account-based play.
Yep.
And the first question I have for you, and then I want to get into what BCLC is looking at and doing, but if it really is as simple as what Norse Tipping has done, we make it mandatory, we set some limits, and we reduce harm significantly almost overnight.
Yeah.
What's been the hesitation?
I think there's a few things. First and foremost, most jurisdictions in North America don't have the infrastructure, including our own. We are building that infrastructure, and part of P360, some of the foundational elements are infrastructure elements. So, for instance, three big pieces that we have to do. We have to upgrade our casino gaming system. We have to replace all of the lottery infrastructure end-to-end, including the in-store material. And we have to build out our customer relationship management infrastructure to handle kind of an enterprise-wide sort of player load. So those are big projects. They're multi-year projects. They cost a lot, but at the end of the day, you get a really amazing situation where you can provide personalized service to each and every player throughout the BCLC system and also provide players with a host of options, including health options, player health options in that system as well. So I think the goal is a good one, but it takes a few years to get there. We're all in on it, BCLC. The money's there, the commitment there, the work is happening as we sit here, but it is a big investment and it is a bit of a journey.
And you and I have had a chance to talk about P360, and the way I would describe it to somebody, it's more than technical advancement and modernization of our systems. It's in some respects, it's a transformation of the business.
Yeah.
And if you really dig deeper, it's a bit of a movement. Could give me some more insight into what that is.
Sure. So, and everyone in the audience here will be familiar, many, many companies, not just in our business, but in many businesses throughout the world, talk about becoming player-centric, player-focused, these kinds of things. For many, it's just talk. And no one actually does anything to listen to their customers, listen to their players, act on what they hear, et cetera. So at the heart of this thing that we call P360 is really moving BCLC on an enterprise level to a player-centric world, where we really do put the player at the center and we actually build and orient the entire company around a single player. That's sort of the big change. And to do that, you have to have the infrastructure I just talked about, But more than that, you have to adopt the philosophy, and you have to make that commitment as a business that you really are going to start to go into a listening mode and act on what you hear from your customers, from your players, from your partners. So that, to me, that philosophical shift is actually the biggest piece of all. The infrastructure stuff, we can actually do that. Costs a bit, but we can do that fairly simply. It's really changing that philosophy, and ultimately, at the end of the day, you're actually changing the culture of the company. And I think that is going to be the big shift that we're going to go through, that we have started to go on, and it's going to be a journey that's going to take a number of years. This is not a fast sort of thing. We're sort of saying 5 years, but it's going to be more than 5 years. But our hope is that at the end of 5 years, we will be well on our way down this path, and that we will have achieved that cultural change that we want in the organization.
So we talked this morning in the panel discussion, and then in the session that I did in the other room, we talked about purpose. And it begins with understanding your purpose. I know BCLC is looking at its being a social purpose organization.
Yes, that's part of it.
And how do we transition to that? What does that mean? If we put the customer at the center of that conversation, yes, we need technology to help us get there, but is it more than that?
Yeah, so I'll just digress a little bit into social purpose, and that is sort of a new component that we have sort of wrapped into this P360 thing that we're doing. But it's really, social purpose, and we have, I know, some experts in the audience here, is really not just about making your community better, but it's also making your business better and making your business grow. So when we think about social purpose, it has to pass a few tests, and we're kind of on that journey to define what our social purpose is going to be. But one of the tests that it has to go through is, do our players see it as a value add to their experience and their interaction with us? And if our players aren't seeing that added value because of what we're doing under the notion of social purpose, then we probably wouldn't do that, whatever path we were looking at. We'd do something different. So that really is going to be different. And again, if we don't meet our player expectations on social purpose and on many other fronts, then, we're really not going to get that cultural player-centric transformation that we really want to have.
So this sort of opens up a whole bunch of questions, and let's add one more layer. I heard Garth reference this yesterday. As part of this new social purpose, as part of this transformation, you've also set perhaps the loftiest goal I've seen in the industry.
Yes.
That we want to get to a place where we make no revenue from problem gambling.
Yeah, from high-risk play.
From a high-risk play.
Yeah.
How is that possible?
Well, you know what? It's interesting. This was a process that we went through as an executive about 2 years ago. It was about a 9-month process where we really came out with a whole new strategic plan for BCLC. And one of the outcomes that we have, that we had three pillars, player experience, responsible growth, and agile people and process. Under responsible growth, we said one of the outcomes that we want is that BCLC will not take any revenue from high-risk play. You're right, that's huge, that's bold, that's aspirational. And candidly, the debate was, do we want to minimize revenue from, or do we want, something like that, some kind of qualifier. And we had a lot of debate on this, and I can tell you at the end of the day, the entire executive fully aligned, no qualifiers, we need to be absolute, we need to be aspirational here, no revenue from high-risk play. And we felt fabulous once we had reached that point in our discussion, and we have to now translate that into the business. And I've heard, what's that going to do to your revenues? There's all these kinds of things that come up. Our belief is that we can actually build a bigger, better company by not taking revenue from high-risk play.
So this is where I'm going to channel my inner par.
And
for those that weren't for those that weren't at his session yesterday, I'll give you a bit of a background on Norse Tipping.
Sure.
They launched mandatory player card, mm-hmm. in 2009 in Norway.
Yep.
And interestingly enough, for the first 4 years, it was a marketing focus, marketing-based mm-hmm. focus, where we were having more regular and more direct conversations with players.
Yes.
Because we had more information about them. He tells the story much better than I could about a phone call that came through to the lottery from a woman whose brother had really had a lot of problems, disrupted his life mm-hmm. in significant ways. That kind of made its way to the executive and was the catalyst for change within the organization. And they made that decision that we already have the technology and the tools.
Yes.
Let's just use it for good, mm-hmm. right? So responsible play, responsible gambling will become the pillar, the center pillar of why we exist and how we deliver our business. And they had the player base card. They mm-hmm. implemented spend limits.
Yep.
They have implemented a dashboard developed at a Svenska Spel a number of years ago called PlayScan.
Yep.
That gives real time data to players on their behavior, where they fall in risk, and that kind of thing. And now they are very aware of where all the revenue comes from.
Right.
They're very aware of the impact the games are having on their players. They're aware of high, medium, and low risk players. And interestingly enough, they will report channel by channel. They know how much revenue they get mm-hmm. from at-risk players. And in some channels, in some cases, VLT is one good example, 53% of the revenue comes from at-risk players. They're aware of it, they know it, and they've made the conscious decision to continue, although it's prompting lots of conversation.
Yes.
But they've made the conscious decision to continue because the revenue is also important.
Mm-hmm.
So we can put technology in place, we can set limits, we can create, but at the end of the day, is it a broader conversation of, again, why are we here and what are we here for?
I think so. I mean, I'm just sort of trying to get the question out of that, but I think, you know, from our perspective, one of the things that, and when I talk about BCLC on an enterprise basis, I'm really thinking of sort of all of our channels and all of our businesses, not just sort of the lottery side, but all parts of our business. And, you know, we know that we churn a lot of players in our business. That's not a good thing, not for us and certainly not for the players. And we know that when we churn players, they often leave because they're financially damaged, and that probably causes social damage in their lives. Nobody at BCLC, nobody that I know connected to this industry wants that, and we certainly don't. So our view is that we need to eliminate that, and quite honestly, if you want to just, to be candid, if you want to set sort of that moral piece aside for a moment, quite candidly, we believe that there is a bigger, better business by having players connect and play with you less, but over a longer period of time. And that avoids the financial damage, the social damage, the personal damage that can come from that kind of churn and burn that we know exists in this business. So we think, and there may be some transition period, that's fine, but we think at the end of the day, to have a sustainable player base is the better way to go, that where healthy play is the only kind of play that's happening with any of our products in any of our channels anywhere. So that's kind of the goal, and it is lofty. Having said that, you got to start somewhere. And so we have started on that journey. Part of it, like in Norway, is the investment in the infrastructure and technology. That's happening. But the other part, much like in Norway, and I've spoken about it, is really that cultural, that philosophical change that you have to go through as a company, and you have to bring all of your stakeholders on that journey. And that, again, is going to be part of this process. And so this is just not us kind of off by ourselves, but we are engaging and will start to even more fully engage many of the stakeholders and our shareholder, all of whom have a role to play in this journey.
You know, Kevin, on the surface, it sounds great, absolutely yeah. The right thing to do. Can't believe we haven't done it already. But there is that one factor we sometimes don't talk about, and it's the reliance on, from government on the revenue that you generate today. Mm-hmm. And so how do you convince politicians or bureaucrats, deputy ministers of finance and treasury and others to say, you know, we believe that this is going to make us a stronger, bigger, but we may dip before we grow.
Yeah.
We may need to do, you may need to take less to eventually take more that is more responsible in that growth. How do you have that conversation?
I actually don't think it's as challenging as it may sound. You know, we have had a long relationship with our shareholder, different political parties, different people, all those kinds of things. And really, at the end of the day, I've always found conversations to be, yes, there is a demand in government for revenue to do, you know, serve good causes in society and in our communities. We understand that. We all recognize that. But, you know, just recently, and I don't want to bring up the money laundering situation because everyone's probably heard enough about that, but for instance, BCLC will, for the first time in its history, probably this year, not do as well as we did last year, and that'll be a first. That's how it's looking right now, and part of it is to do with measures that have been put in place to combat money laundering. So whether they're good or bad or indifferent, they are having an impact on the business. There was no hesitation to do that if there was a belief that it could actually help a situation. So my belief is that if we can put forward and articulate clearly the rationale, the player health rationale behind these kinds of changes that we want to make to the business, I believe at the end of the day, all of our stakeholders will come on this journey with us. It's a bit of an article of faith at this point, but I've been with the company now for 18 years and had a lot of involvement with our shareholder. I have confidence that that conversation will be a productive conversation at the end of the day.
So you're developing the technology that would allow things like account-based play.
Yes.
And look, we have that today very much online with our online play and all of the measures that every regulated gaming organization has put in place and the accounts that you have to create and the identification measures and all of those things that need to happen. And having the technology is great, but you haven't quite made the decision yet whether or not you will have mandatory account-based play. Is that right?
No, we have not. I think there's, you know, that option is always there for us, and we're in very, very early days. I think that that's an option that we may look at down the road. I don't see us looking at that in the short to medium term, and I think there's several reasons for that. First and foremost, we're not a monopoly, really. We like to think we are, but we're really not. Canadian citizens in any province, particularly here in British Columbia, can play now virtually anything that we offer from different providers. Call it gray market, call it across border Washington State, call it whatever you want, but those options are available. So I think if we were to come out of the gate with mandatory, I think the people we most want to help would be pushed into those other options, and we would never help them. Sounds like a magic bullet, but I don't think it is. I think it's a bit of a false promise at this point in time. I think also, I don't think culturally we're ready for that yet. We may be down the road, but we're not there yet. But I think also one of the challenges that we have as an organization is how do we create a value proposition for players who will want to have an account with us, who will be okay with us, knowing all facets of their play with us, who will be okay with us providing player health activity and intervention and things of that sort. That to me is a huge challenge. I think it's going to be one of the big challenges that we have to come to grips with as we go down this road, whether account-based play, P360, all of that stuff, is to create a value proposition that will engage players into account-based play with us. And it'll be loyalty, it'll be social purpose, it'll be all those kinds of things. I think if we went to mandatory too fast, I think we kind of let ourselves off the hook. I think we have to be challenged, really challenged, and we have to have a goal of 100% account-based play, and then what do we have to do to engage players in that value proposition in that form of a relationship with us. So I think there's three good reasons why we wouldn't move there quickly. Having said that, we've discussed this. It's an option that we have in our back pocket that we can pull out at the appropriate time if we think there is reason to do that.
So let me play devil's advocate just a little bit. If you have the tools, you have the technology, we've got an example in the world where they actually didn't in any way see a decrease in revenue. They've maintained 70% market share in Norway.
Yeah.
Don't you have a duty of care to if I said to you account-based play is going to better than ever before allow players to make truly informed decisions about their own behavior. It's going to allow you to set real spend and win limits. It's going to allow you to have real-time interaction and real-time intervention with players, and it will probably help considerably fix your money laundering challenges. Aren't you compelled don't you have a duty to implement that?
Yeah, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. We're just not saying you must at this point in time.
So will it work if you don't?
That is what the key challenge to us as an executive is. We have to find a way to make it work. By the way, there's other examples in the world where people have gone to this and they've had, frankly, mixed results going forward. So to say you must, to engage with us, you must have an account, many people will say, no, we don't have to engage with you, and we will go elsewhere. There's all those choices. And I don't think we can underestimate the kinds of choices that are available to Canadians should they wish to gamble, including, by the way, even lottery now. So there are gray market operators that take our games and resell them via the Internet to players in Canada, if you can believe that. But that's actually happening today. So we're not a monopoly, and so we will. Those people will go. And yes, those who choose to stick with us will have all those benefits, but my gut tells me that the people we really want to help are those who go to those other sources. So I think it's too early to move in that direction, and I think we have to give it like a really serious best shot over the next number of years and see how good we can do.
So then it becomes a value proposition. It becomes being able to create enough value that people will want to be part of the BCLC experience. How do you do that?
That's our challenge. And, you know, that is part of the change that we have to go through. So the other thing that we have to do, the other big stakeholders in this journey, will be our retail partners and our casino partners. They have got to be fully engaged and fully involved with us on this journey, or it will not work. They will be critical. I mean, right now, 94% of our revenue comes through a third-party partner, be it a retailer or a casino partner. So they're critical to us, and they have to come on the journey as well as we go down this path, because they're going to be a part of the solution, in my mind.
Is the value proposition from an organization or a regulated gaming organization like BCLC by offering, you know, good player health, by being responsible, is that enough today? Or do we need to, you know, there was a great session yesterday with Joss Allen and Stewart about where the disruption is coming, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, he was talking about the change in buying, and the fact is we get our groceries delivered, we get our liquor delivered, we get our food delivered, we get all of our supplies delivered, and, oh, by the way, Uber and Amazon don't sell lottery products.
Yep. Today.
Today. Oh, interesting. Yes. You heard it here first. Yes. There you go. But where do we start? Do we start with the responsible growth or the experience, or is it we got to mash it all up and continue churning it out all together? How do you approach this? How do you? It seems like such a beast.
It's huge. The good news is we actually have an implementation plan that we've now built over the last number of months, probably over the last 6 months. It's kind of like any big project, you divide it into pieces. We've actually divided this into 10 pieces. We are, as we sat here today, assembling teams of people from our organization to work on each of these pieces. One of the pieces is value proposition. One of the pieces is customer experience. One of the pieces is how do we change our business model with our partners in order to facilitate this kind of an outcome. And there's another, you know, six or seven pieces, huge pieces, in order to achieve it. So we are under no illusions in terms of the size of the task ahead. Having said that, we've been building to this for some time. It's not like we just sort of woke up one day and said, oh, we should have account-based play. This has been very much in our thinking for a number of years. What we're doing now under this P360 banner is really bringing it all together, consolidating it, and really accelerating it. Having said that, acceleration is still measured in years. We're just the scope of the challenge, but we have to start sometime, and I believe that, I know that as we've started to socialize this with our peers elsewhere in Canada and elsewhere in North America, there's a lot of interest and attention to what we're doing. I'm getting more and more questions. How exactly are you planning on doing this, and how exactly are you planning on doing that? We're talking about affiliate models. What does an affiliate model look like in the North American context? All of those kinds of things. So I think it's interesting and exciting work. I know that within the organization there is really kind of building excitement and anticipation as we go in this journey, because it is going to change the role of literally every single person within BCLC. No question about that. And I think in a really good way as we go forward.
So when you look out 5 years, 10 years, whatever that
yep.
time frame is, and you've built the value proposition where you believe at least a volume, enough of a volume of your player base is going to be with you.
Yep.
Talk to me about some of the benefits you've already explored about what account-based play could do for you and how that could again change the conversation of player health and player experience.
Well, kind of back to, I think, what we talked about earlier, Mike, sort of the whole notion of personalization. And, you know, really, we're reconfiguring BCLC. There's going to be structural change within BCLC, significant structural change over the next couple of years, I would guess, as we reconfigure ourselves, quote, around that player. So personalization is going to be a part of it. You know, some of the things that we've been doing, exploratory work with players and with partners on this topic, and as you know, we got to take friction out of our business. For instance, the first battleground, and by the way, many other industries are way ahead of us. We're way behind on this. So, for instance, right now at retail, the battleground is convenience. We don't show up well on convenience, and that is today's battleground. It's tomorrow's table stakes. Personalization is sort of where everyone's going. That's going to be tomorrow's battleground. And then 5 years from now, it'll be table stakes. So we have to get there. We absolutely have to get there. And we think that account-based play, which is part of it, but really creating that relationship, and also to we have to move the experience needle way up. So, for instance, the role that experience plays in player satisfaction, at least at retail, when they engage with us, almost three-quarters of the satisfaction comes from the purchase and the interaction with the retailer. About 25% comes from the actual product for player satisfaction, which is something we all had to kind of swallow. Oh, really? And it just, again, you know, told us how important experience is. So how do we augment that experience, and particularly how do we bring that digital and physical world together? That's a whole other dimension around P360, is really bringing the digital world and the physical world together so that you create at the end of the day kind of a seamless circular ecosystem among players, retailers, casino partners, etc. That's a big part of this vision. And you know, one of the things that we're starting to think about is right now we provide all of the prizing. But as you think about the future, do we really have to do that when we have all of these partners? How might that look? And I can tell you, I can't give names, but we've started to engage with some of our major retail partners, and they're very much up for this journey. They're very much up for the idea of personalization, of discrete networks, for instance, all 7-Elevens or all Macs or all Huskies, We'll have the ability to do that within a year and a bit. So all of that starts to ladder into this, and it becomes more than just BCLC. It becomes BCLC and a host of partners. And, you know, at first they say, well, that sounds really ambitious. Could that really happen? But when you think about our footprint, the lottery footprint and the casino footprint and our digital footprint today within this province, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. So we are, I think, uniquely positioned to bring diverse partners together to create value for players that they couldn't get through any other relationship. It's big and it's exciting, but that's kind of like the journey that we're going on.
One of the questions that always comes up when we talk about account-based play is the amount of data that every organization could have about its players.
Yep.
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you grapple with that in this age of privacy and data manipulation and all of the things that we hear about, the horror stories, the Cambridge Analyticas, and all of those things? How do you balance those two things?
Well, we know right from the get-go, given our profile, given our shareholder, that you know we have got to be absolutely perfect, literally perfect in terms of data protection and privacy and all of those things. There's lots of regulations. We have got to basically be as good or better than any comparable out there just because of who we are. We know that. So that is very much a part of our plan. You know, in some of the early research that we've done with players, you know, one of the things that players insist upon is, happy for you guys to have my data, but I want personal control over my data, and I want to be able to literally erase all of my data anytime. So these are some of the trade-offs that we're going to have to come to grips with as we go forward, or players will not want to engage with us, and that's happening with a lot of other industries too. You know, player rights, customer rights, etc. We have got to fully embrace that notion and act on it. Absolutely critical, or this thing will not be successful.
A number of years ago, when I was working with Atlantic Lottery, Nova Scotia Gaming Corporation, NSGC, did a pilot program in Nova Scotia on account-based play.
Yes.
Lots of interesting learnings out of that. One of the challenges that we saw throughout that was sharing of cards, the lending of cards, the, you know, especially those high-risk players who didn't want to be identified.
Mm-hmm.
And even Par shared that yesterday, that before they added the third level of security, people were actually renting out their cards for 20% of winnings in Norway.
Yes.
I would only rent it out to somebody who was going to be good at it, but anyway. but they added another level where you now get a PIN on your phone when you log in, and it's the only way you can log in. Are you afraid by not making it mandatory and making that we would start to make decisions and we would start to make corporate decisions based on half-truths and half-information?
I'm sort of smiling as you bring that up. It just so coincidental because literally, I typed it up this morning, we have an item on our next executive agenda that I put forward called identity verification. And it's coming up all over the place for us right now, and certainly as we go down this P360 path or journey, that is going to become more and more prevalent. The good news is there's lots of technology out there around identity verification, not just age, but you are who you say you are. But that, again, is going to be one of the components that we have to build in to this approach that we're taking is we have to know you are you as you engage with us for all those problems that you just outlined. So I actually, my hope is that, I think my executive will support me, that we're going to actually create a task group. We're going to ideally involve GPEB, our regulator, in this. And I think it's going to be probably an 18-month to 24-month project, if you will, if you want to call it that, for us to really get our heads around the kinds of controls and pieces and systems that we need to put in place around what I call identity verification. I think it's going to be one of the huge challenges, but if we don't solve for that, then I think we'll have some of the problems that you've just alluded to. So And again, you know, on this journey, and you're bringing up a lot of great examples, we're fully aware that there.
We've been having all kinds of conversations about future proofing, about responsible growth, about how we take this industry forward. Are we doing the right things? Is there more we should be doing? Is there more we could be doing? And the idea of account-based play, ID-based play, continues to be talked about. And if you were in the session yesterday with Parr on his overview of Norse tipping, you really do see that that is an option that could really reduce some of the issues that we have. It's one of those opportunities that probably deserves more look. And today, in North America in particular, really the most account-based play we have is our online portal and the work that we have to do there, or if you're in a some sort of VIP or players club at casinos. So why hasn't it become more widespread? Why haven't we as an industry looked at account-based play as one of those real true options towards responsible growth? So it's my real pleasure to call up to the stage Kevin Gass, Vice President of Lottery Gaming at BCLC. Kevin's responsible for the strategic development of the lottery business unit, providing leadership and strategic direction in support of marketing, sales, distribution of lottery brands. He has operational responsibility for staff who provide products, services, and support to the organization, the customers, and the business partners. And he's also leading a new vision and a transformation, really, of BCLC called P360 that we'll get into and talk. So please give a warm welcome to Kevin Gass.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
I say when we go from two panelists to one, the pressure increases more than 50%.
Thank you for that. Yes.
But, you know, we're here to talk about account-based play.
Yep.
And the first question I have for you, and then I want to get into what BCLC is looking at and doing, but if it really is as simple as what Norse Tipping has done, we make it mandatory, we set some limits, and we reduce harm significantly almost overnight.
Yeah.
What's been the hesitation?
I think there's a few things. First and foremost, most jurisdictions in North America don't have the infrastructure, including our own. We are building that infrastructure, and part of P360, some of the foundational elements are infrastructure elements. So, for instance, three big pieces that we have to do. We have to upgrade our casino gaming system. We have to replace all of the lottery infrastructure end-to-end, including the in-store material. And we have to build out our customer relationship management infrastructure to handle kind of an enterprise-wide sort of player load. So those are big projects. They're multi-year projects. They cost a lot, but at the end of the day, you get a really amazing situation where you can provide personalized service to each and every player throughout the BCLC system, and also provide players with a host of options, including health options, player health options in that system as well. So I think the goal is a good one, but it takes a few years to get there. We're all in on it, BCLC. The money's there, the commitment there, the work is happening as we sit here, but it is a big investment and it is a bit of a journey.
And you and I have had a chance to talk about P360, and the way I would describe it to somebody, it's more than technical advancement and modernization of our systems. It's in some respects, it's a transformation of the business.
Yeah.
And if you really dig deeper, it's a bit of a movement. Could give me some more insight into what that is.
Sure. So, and everyone in the audience here will be familiar, many, many companies, not just in our business, but in many businesses throughout the world, talk about becoming player-centric, player-focused, these kinds of things. For many, it's just talk. And no one actually does anything to listen to their customers, listen to their players, act on what they hear, etc. So at the heart of this thing that we call P360 is really moving BCLC on an enterprise level to a player-centric world, where we really do put the player at the center, and we actually build and orient the entire company around a single player. That's sort of the big change. And to do that, you have to have the infrastructure I just talked about. But more than that, you have to adopt the philosophy, and you have to make that commitment as a business that you really are going to start to go into a listening mode and act on what you hear from your customers, from your players, from your partners. So that, to me, that philosophical shift is actually the biggest piece of all. The infrastructure stuff, we can actually do that. Costs a bit, but we can do that fairly simply. It's really changing that philosophy, and ultimately, at the end of the day, you're actually changing the culture of the company. And I think that is going to be the big shift that we're going to go through, that we have started to go on, and it's going to be a journey that's going to take a number of years. This is not a fast sort of thing. We're sort of saying 5 years, but it's going to be more than 5 years. But our hope is that at the end of 5 years, we will be well on our way down this path, and that we will have achieved that cultural change that we want in the organization.
So we talked this morning in the panel discussion, and then in the session that I did in the other room, we talked about purpose. And it begins with understanding your purpose. I know BCLC is looking at its being a social purpose organization.
Yes, that's part of it.
And how do we transition to that? What does that mean? If we put the customer at the center of that conversation, you know, yes, we need technology to help us get there, but is it more than that?
Yeah, so I'll just digress a little bit into social purpose, and that is sort of a new component that we have sort of wrapped into this P360 thing that we're doing. But it's really, you know, social purpose, and we have, I know, some experts in the audience here, is really not just about making your community better, but it's also making your business better and making your business grow. So when we think about social purpose, it has to pass a few tests, and we're kind of on that journey to define what our social purpose is going to be. But one of the tests that it has to go through is, do our players see it as a value add to their experience and their interaction with us? And if our players aren't seeing that added value because of what we're doing under the notion of social purpose, then we probably wouldn't do that, whatever path we were looking at. We'd do something different. So that really is going to be different. And again, if we don't meet our player expectations on social purpose and on many other fronts, then, you know, we're really not going to get that cultural player-centric transformation that we really want to have.
So this sort of opens up a whole bunch of questions, and let's add one more layer. I heard Garth reference this yesterday. As part of this new social purpose, as part of this transformation, you've also set perhaps the loftiest goal I've seen in the industry.
Yes.
That we want to get to a place where we make no revenue from problem gambling.
Yeah, from high-risk play.
From a high-risk play.
Yeah.
How is that possible?
Well, you know what? It's interesting. This was a process that we went through as an executive about 2 years ago. It was about a 9-month process where we really came out with a whole new strategic plan for BCLC. And one of the outcomes that we have, that we had three pillars, player experience, responsible growth, and agile people and process. Under responsible growth, we said one of the outcomes that we want is that BCLC will not take any revenue from high-risk play. You're right, that's huge, that's bold, that's aspirational. And candidly, the debate was, do we want to minimize revenue from, or do we want, you know, something like that, some kind of qualifier. And we had a lot of debate on this, and I can tell you at the end of the day, the entire executive fully aligned, no qualifiers, we need to be absolute, we need to be aspirational here, no revenue from high-risk play. And we felt fabulous once we had reached that point in our discussion, and we have to now translate that into the business. And I've heard, oh, what's that going to do to your revenues? There's all these kinds of things that come up. Our belief is that we can actually build a bigger, better company by not taking revenue from high-risk play.
So this is where I'm going to channel my inner par. And for those that weren't at his session yesterday, I'll give you a bit of a background on Norse Tipping.
Sure.
They launched player card, mandatory player card, in 2009 in Norway.
Yep.
And interestingly enough, for the first 4 years, it was a marketing focus, marketing-based focus, where we were having more regular and more direct conversations with players.
Yes.
Because we had more information about them. He tells the story much better than I could about a phone call that came through to the lottery from a woman whose brother had really had a lot of problems, disrupted his life in significant ways. That kind of made its way to the executive and was the catalyst for change within the organization. And they made that decision that we already have the technology and the tools.
Yes.
Let's just use it for good, right? So responsible play, responsible gambling will become the pillar, the center pillar of why we exist and how we deliver our business. And they had the player base card. They implemented spend limits.
Yep.
They have implemented a dashboard developed at a Svenska Spel a number of years ago called PlayScan.
Yep.
That gives real-time data to players on their behavior, where they fall in risk and that kind of thing. And now they are very aware of where all the revenue comes from.
Right.
They're very aware of the impact the games are having on their players. They're aware of high, medium, and low risk players. And interestingly enough, they will report channel by channel. They know how much revenue they get from at-risk players. And in some channels, in some cases, VLT is one good example, 53% of the revenue comes from at-risk players. They're aware of it, they know it, and they've made the conscious decision to continue, although it's prompting lots of conversation.
Yes.
But they've made the conscious decision to continue because the revenue is also important. So we can put technology in place, we can set limits, we can create, but at the end of the day, is it a broader conversation of, again, why are we here and what are we here for?
I think so. I mean, I'm just sort of trying to get the question out of that, but I think, you know, from our perspective, one of the things that, and when I talk about BCLC on an enterprise basis, I'm really thinking of sort of all of our channels and all of our businesses, not just sort of the lottery side, but all parts of our business. And, you know, we know that we churn a lot of players in our business. That's not a good thing, not for us and certainly not for the players. And we know that when we churn players, they often leave because they're financially damaged, and that probably causes social damage in their lives. Nobody at BCLC, nobody that I know connected to this industry wants that, and we certainly don't. So our view is that we need to eliminate that, and quite honestly, if you want to just, to be candid, if you want to set sort of that moral piece aside for a moment, quite candidly, we believe that there is a bigger, better business by having players connect and play with you less, but over a longer period of time. And that avoids the financial damage, the social damage, the personal damage that can come from that kind of churn and burn that we know exists in this business. So we think, and there may be some transition period, that's fine, but we think at the end of the day, to have a sustainable player base is the better way to go, that where healthy play is the only kind of play that's happening with any of our products in any of our channels anywhere. So that's kind of the goal, and it is lofty. Having said that, you got to start somewhere. And so we have started on that journey. Part of it, like in Norway, is the investment in the infrastructure and technology. That's happening. But the other part, much like in Norway, and I've spoken about it, is really that cultural, that philosophical change that you have to go through as a company, and you have to bring all of your stakeholders on that journey. And that, again, is going to be part of this process. And so this is just not us kind of off by ourselves, but we are engaging and will start to even more fully engage many of the stakeholders and our shareholder, all of whom have a role to play in this journey.
You know, Kevin, on the surface, it sounds great, absolutely yeah. the right thing to do. Can't believe we haven't done it already. But there is that one factor we sometimes don't talk about, and it's the reliance on, from government on the revenue that mm-hmm. you generate today. Mm-hmm. And so how do you convince politicians or bureaucrats, deputy ministers of finance and treasury and others to say, you know, we believe that this is going to make us a stronger, bigger, but we may dip before we grow.
Yeah.
You may need to take less to eventually take more that is more responsible in that growth. How do you have that conversation?
I actually don't think it's as challenging as it may sound. We have had a long relationship with our shareholder, different political parties, different people, all those kinds of things. And really, at the end of the day, I've always found conversations to be, yes, there is a demand in government for revenue to do, serve good causes in society and in our communities. We understand that. We all recognize that. But, you know, just recently, and I don't want to bring up the money laundering situation because everyone's probably heard enough about that, but for instance, BCLC will, for the first time in its history, probably this year, not do as well as we did last year, and that'll be a first. That's how it's looking right now, and part of it is to do with measures that have been put in place to combat money laundering. So whether they're good or bad or indifferent, they are having an impact on the business. There was no hesitation to do that if there's a belief that it could actually help a situation. So my belief is that if we can put forward and articulate clearly the rationale, the player health rationale behind these kinds of changes that we want to make to the business, I believe at the end of the day, all of our stakeholders will come on this journey with us. It's a bit of an article of faith at this point, but I've been with the company now for 18 years and had a lot of involvement with our shareholder. I have confidence that that conversation will be a productive conversation at the end of the day.
So you're developing the technology that would allow things like account-based play.
Yes.
And look, we have that today very much online with our online play and all of the measures that every regulated gaming organization has put in place and the accounts that you have to create and the identification measures and all of those things that need to happen. And having the technology is great, but you haven't quite made the decision yet whether or not you will have mandatory account-based play. Is that right?
No, we have not. I think there's, that option is always there for us, and we're in very, very early days. I think that that's an option that we may look at down the road. I don't see us looking at that in the short to medium term, and I think there's several reasons for that. First and foremost, we're not a monopoly, really. We like to think we are, but we're really not. Canadian citizens in any province, particularly here in British Columbia, can play now virtually anything that we offer from different providers. Call it gray market, call it across border Washington State, call it whatever you want, but those options are available. So I think if we were to come out of the gate with mandatory, I think the people we most want to help would be pushed into those other options, and we would never help them. Sounds like a magic bullet, but I don't think it is. I think it's a bit of a false promise at this point in time. I think also, I don't think culturally we're ready for that yet. We may be down the road, but we're not there yet. But I think also one of the challenges that we have as an organization is how do we create a value proposition for players who will want to have an account with us, who will be okay with us, knowing all facets of their play with us, who will be okay with us.